Yeah, Alpha is his first name. Shard is his last name. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 461, recorded on March 22nd, 2017. And welcome to the 461st edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 294th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, it's been an eventful week for a while. And not in terms of news necessarily, but in terms of games. I understand you two were chattering about Zelda before the podcast began.
I've been watching a lot of Let's Plays of Breath of the Wild and being more and more tempted to wanting to get the game because it just looks like a lot of fun.
Do you have a Wii?
No, I don't. I don't have a Wii or a Wii U or Switch, so it's just going to be a while before I get it.
Yeah. You've been playing a lot too, haven't you, DJ?
Yeah. I've finally got through a bunch of my writing stuff, so I've sat down and tried to, like, sort of go through a region a day, which the regions are super massive in that game, and each one easily takes 6 hours on average just to get through everything there. And I'm sort of doing it in a completionist sort of way, but I'm also just – the game rewards you for just going off the tracks and just looking around and seeing what you can find. So I'm having a good time.
So I've been playing – a small game. It's called the Banner Saga, and actually, I just got a code for the Banner Saga 1 and 2. They're releasing a new pack, which includes a new pack for Banner Saga 2. Here's the thing: I got Banner Saga 2 for free, and I was debating whether to play it or not because I hadn't played the first Banner Saga. This happened to drop into my lap, so now I can at least play the first Banner Saga and be able to cut. Because things, people say that a lot of the stuff that happens in the Banner Saga 1 does affect what happens in number 2. So there's that. I've also been playing a lot of FTL lately. I don't know what it is. For some reason that roguelike is starting to become more addictive for me.
FTL's always been addictive. That game is fantastic.
I really should get it for the iPad because as good of a PC game as it is, it's just a game that screams touchscreen.
I can see that.
Yeah. Definitely.
But I have been playing Mass Effect Andromeda. Not since last Thursday because, I don't do EA Access or anything. But I will say, it's the worst of the Mass Effect games. Even though the worst of the Mass Effect games is still better than a lot of games. But there are so many bad design decisions. And for a BioWare game, it is startlingly amateurish. When some of the stuff that you expect from a BioWare / Black Isle / Obsidian game. For instance, there's a character named Peavy, right? But my character started talking about her before I actually met her. That is shocking to me. They talk about stuff that haven't happened yet. Like when the architect appears, you say, "Oh, it's an architect," and I'm thinking, "How do you know? I haven't met any of this." Connors say, "Well, if you can control the remnant, so can we." Huh? I haven't even come close to getting to that level of the game yet, in which you can hack enemies. So yeah. Oh, and by the way, I wanted to hear the discussion on the architect. You remember that stupid human reaper boss battle at the end of Mass Effect 2? Well, let's make it stupider and more annoying and put it in the middle of the game.
Oh, that sounds terrible. They need to beta test this better. But
it isn't that it's beta testing. It's just bad design decisions. For example, you know how annoying it is if the use button and the melee button are the same button.
Oh my god, Zelda CDI'd it.
Here's the thing, and you don't automatically go into combo when people are fighting against you. So now when you want to do a melee and they're near a thing, I'm in combat. There's a guy near a device, and I'm trying to melee him, and instead my guy keeps on trying to push the button.
That's a shame.
And here's the thing, you know, not everything has to be an open world game. This was not, so, you know, they're making all the same mistakes they made with Dragon Age Inquisition, except for the fact that at least there's not melee combat in, well, there is melee combat, but it's not melee combat focused. You're not sword and sorcery, you know. And when I went to narrative mode, you know, things died quickly, so at least I know there's that. They don't. You don't really have that that option in Mass Effect Andromeda. I mean, in Dragon Age Inquisition. Yeah. And right now, I'm just seriously considering going into narrative mode just so I can get the story over with. And here's the thing about open world games. I'm not going to play it again. I'm not going to go through all that crap. You know? I replayed Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 endlessly because guess what? It's a crafted story. You can't do that with an open world game. You cannot do that with an open world game. You know, it's just too much. And I'm glad it's getting low review scores. Because this is a misstep. You know? EA's got to get it through its fucking head that not everything is the fucking Elder Scrolls. Not everything has to be a goddamn open world game. And you know, another thing? Not everything has to use the fucking Frostbite engine. Because the Frostbite engine has problems when it's asked to do anything but first-person shooters. This is a fact. But EA wants to save money on engines. They don't want to pay Epic to use the Unreal Engine again.
Or don't they just make a new engine?
Because that costs money, too. DICE had the Frostbite engine already, and EA bought DICE. And they said, ooh, this Frostbite engine looks pretty. Let's make everything with a Frostbite engine. No, it doesn't work that way. They just don't get it, you know? The same is step with The Sims 4, which, by the way, is getting its Bowling Night DLC. Whoop-de-doo. I still haven't played The Sims 4, and I'm glad of it.
My wife and daughter have had a lot of fun playing Sims 4.
Yeah, that's nice. They just told them to play Sims 3. Even better, Sims 2. Much better games. Much, much better games. I mean, at least The Sims 3, you know, wasn't gimped on purpose, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, you want a toddler phase? Well, guess what? Screw you. They go from baby to child instantly.
They have the toddler phase now.
Now, after people complained for 2 years.
Well, I think they were possibly developing it, but
they wanted to release it as DLC, the toddler DLC.
Actually, I think people got it for free.
Well, whatever. It's just, you know, they wanted it now, which is why Mass Effect 3 was released unfinished and why Star Wars The Old Republic was released unfinished. They still haven't learned their lessons.
Yeah, the real problem is EA. They really seem to be...
No, it isn't EA. It's a lot of publishers.
Mm.
You know, John Riccitiello is gone, but someone has to explain to them how things work. You know, Ubisoft has gone down the rabbit hole already. Every game is Assassin's Creed, whether they want it or not. You know, and they want to say, well, you can play Mass Effect Andromeda for 100 hours. Yeah, but 50 hours of those are going to be during the loading screens, which aren't necessary. You know, you have to zoom from planet to planet to planet. You have to go through this entire animation sequence, which is unnecessary. And it doesn't belong because it doesn't have the same planet that thing in Mass Effect 1 through 3. They have a completely different ship, but you know what? We don't even have the galaxy map, but we're going to do the galaxy map anyway, even if it doesn't exist in this game. You know?
Mm.
This is not and here's the thing, you know, the Musica brothers are not Ray Musica and the other guy are not there anymore. And I'm wondering, and Casey Hudson isn't there anymore, and a lot of people aren't there anymore. So I'm wondering if you have people who are not BioWare people trying to do a BioWare game, and it's not working.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, actually. I mean, we had an era of some really good CRPGs, and we've come to this point now where so many people have gone through that revolving door that it's no longer the same quality as it was before because all those people are gone.
Did I mention that the multiplayer also completely sucks, which is one of the strengths of Mass Effect 3?
Really?
Yeah. It sucks. You know, rather than keep the Mass Effect 3 way of combat, you know. Oh, and by the way, you know, combat is bad too. I mean, in an open world, it really doesn't work, no matter how much verticality you have. But in a game that's so heavily dependent on, cover-based third-person shooter, it doesn't do cover-based very well because that's not what the Frostbite engine does.
Hmm.
You're sliding around on the back of cover, and very often they don't turn around when you change direction. So you end up backing out of cover with your gun pointing the wrong way.
I don't understand these decisions. It's
like I said, I'm only playing Mass Effect Andromeda to do this story. I'm probably going to go into narrative mode so that enemies die with two shots, just so I can rush through it. I've had it. I'm not going to be playing it again. I'm not going to test different things like I do with Mass Effect 1 through 3. The fact that Shepard's not involved, makes me less interested in finding out. I mean, I was interested in the story, and the characters are interesting, and the story is interesting, but the story is lazy. Here's the thing. You enter the Andromeda Galaxy, and one of the cool things in the very beginning of the game is that the aliens don't speak any English. You know, they don't speak any English. What's it called? You know? And a lot of it seems like it's going to take you forever for them to learn English. But for no reason, not only does the enemy who you meet in the beginning of the game start speaking English, I mean, you could say, well, maybe they studied our... But one of the races you find there is speaking English. And even worse, the name that we give them is actually the name they are? Somebody, here's the thing, someone said, well, we decided to call them the Ket, you know, because, and then we find out that's actually their name. All these things that we're tossing out, they're actually the names of the things, you know, like we predicted it. That is bad science fiction.
I remember in Final Fantasy X, where you met this other country of people, and you couldn't understand them at first because they were speaking their language, so you would find these little tablets that would slowly teach you the language a little bit at a time. So each time you saw them, some of the words would start being translated. And I think when you've got them all, you could actually understand them. So your character was learning the language in order to understand these people.
And it took a while. It's not even the thing that they used for Javik in Mass Effect 3 on how a Prothean could speak English or any other languages. He has the ability to psychically learn languages like... what is her name? Oh, like Starfire from the Teen Titans. She kisses people or has body contact to learn their language. That's basically what Javik does. But in here, no, they just know English after a few moments. And the first time you meet the big bad, he doesn't say anything. It's really creepy. It's like he doesn't speak our language. He's doing – and not even with his own people. And then all of a sudden he's speaking English and he's acting like a thug. It's really bad writing. It's a wasted opportunity. It's a wasted opportunity because you're going into a new galaxy where there's everything new. You know, I'm enjoying the first planet. I almost have to 100% habitability. You know, it doesn't need to be 100%, but I'm 100%ing it in terms of habitability. There's other stuff on the thing. But you know what? Here's the thing. There's crafting, but I've done very little crafting because I don't know what I need and what I don't need. Because you get all these items, and you know, oh, I don't know if I should salvage them because I may need them later. You know?
Mm.
And, oh, by the way, remember from Mass Effect 2, the mineral scanning? Well, now you actually do it on the planet, and it is worse than anything. You have to be in the Mako substitute, which, by the way, doesn't have a gun. And then you drive around certain parts of the planet, and these are not small planets. These are huge planets. It's like driving around Assassin's Creed trying to find, you know, have your car start to beep that it has minerals under it. It's really bad, and there's so many bad decisions.
That sounds like the worst part of Mass Effect 1, which in Mass Effect 1 you had a gun on the Mako.
No, at least in Mass Effect 1 you had the areas were small, really small. Imagine being in Mass Effect and increasing the size of the Mass Effect map by 20 and doing that. And you don't also only have vague things. At least in Mass Effect 1, the map would show you where everything was on the map. Here, no, just hunt for it. I mean, there's icons on the map, but it's for mission-based stuff. It is really badly manufactured. And here's the thing. Had it not had the Mass Effect name in it, I would have stayed far away. But yeah. I want to know the story, and here's the thing. This could kill the series for a while. You know, I don't see a Mass Effect 5 coming out anytime soon. Not with this backlash. Well-deserved backlash. And, you know, you thought that the ending of Mass Effect 3 got backlash. This is getting a lot more backlash. You can't swing a dead cat. The average review score is 7.5, which may not seem bad, but here's the thing. All the other Mass Effects, 9.6, 9.8, 9.3, 9.5. You know, really high scores. This, they need someone new, a new creative director who knows what they're doing. And I, you know, had I been a director, I would know how to do a Mass Effect 4, keeping in the Milky Way and how to do it. I'm not going to say how because I want to tell BioWare my ideas if they want to hire me. Okay, BioWare? Fat chance. But yeah, this was not a well thought out game, and you can tell it's in the hands of someone else. And it's not even like what was the name of that? It's not even like Rogue One, which is really, really bad because it feels like a fanfic, you know? This is more like it's really, really bad because someone's in charge who don't quite understand the series.
Yeah, I mean, that thing that you told me before about how some of the dialogue points out a character that you haven't even met yet as if you should know them, that's a weird thing for BioWare because, I mean, in every Mass Effect and even Dragon Age games, they thought out the paths
Jade Empire, Knights of the Old Republic, you know, and Jade Empire, Knights of the Old Republic and Mass Effect have the same, and Dragon Age all have the same structure. Initial meeting, then you have four branching quests, and then you meet up again, and you can do those quests in any order you want. And the game but here it's an open world.
Right. What I was going to say was they had so much to consider about like what decisions you had made and what point you would arrive at with those decisions and how certain characters would respond to them. There was so much to consider, like, for would this character know what you did? Would they react to it? Do they have a personal stake in it? And it handled that so very well. So to hear a basic thing like you shouldn't know that character, but you apparently know that character is a really telling thing of where the staff is for this particular
or events that haven't happened yet. It's that bad. I mean, I can tell it's saving up my decisions because now if you go to the stat screen, it says you've responded in this way so many times, in this way so many times, in this way so many times, and I'm wondering if it's actually going to take that into account or if it's just going to be cut and paste endings. You know, I don't know. I mean, you can romance almost everybody. I haven't tried romancing the Krogan Drac yet, but we'll see. Sex irrelevant. Like I said, it's very much Dragon Age Inquisition, taking all the worst parts from it. And the combat, and at least the combat here is better because it's not melee, you know? But I will finish it, because I need to know the story. I'm telling you, they screwed up in a big way with this game. And I'm wondering if it's going to be one of those dips like you see in a long-running series and there's that one bad episode, or if it's the beginning of the end.
I'm very glad that I never got into this series, and I have to say in regards to romance, that less is more. You don't need to have every single combination you can possibly think of.
You know, everything that they dished in Mass Effect 1, they put back in here. You know,
yeah.
But here's the thing, Scott, I'm going to tell you something. Get the trilogy with all the DLC and you're going to have an epic that you're going to love. That's why people find this such a betrayal, because it's like Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah,
this is the Star Trek Enterprise of the Mass Effect games. Actually, you know what it reminds me of? Do you remember the Kevin Sorbo Andromeda? The Andromeda starring Kevin Sorbo? That's what this is like.
Ooh. Wow, that was bad.
It was mediocre, and then it got bad once Kevin Sorbo took over. You know, I mean, I liked some of the characters in that show, but now I'm thinking maybe I should have gotten Troll and I instead.
Yeah.
By the way, Scott, have you played The Binding of Isaac?
No, I have not.
Okay. Because I'm going to say, if you're going to get the Switch, get that. It's really
yeah, nice. I saw that fell in the shop this week. That's a big one, because there hasn't
I've actually noticed that they are putting more RPGs out for the Switch. There's Project Octopath. There's also the...
Yeah, a lot of them are indie games that have already been out, though. That's the thing. But I'm going to say, if you're going to get it, you might as well get The Binding of Isaac, because it's a really twisted Zelda game.
You can,
of the first Zelda...
They're going to release the Saga. Not Saga. It's the
East
Secret. Is it Secret of Mana?
Secret of Mana is the name of the series.
Yes. Yeah, and that is getting released on the Switch. That's what it is.
Like I said, but I would say if you like the first Zelda, you should try the Binding of Isaac, because it's like they took the first Zelda and just made it really creepy.
Yeah, and to my knowledge, this is the first time the game has been legitimately mobile, which is cool.
Like, are you calling the Switch a mobile platform? Is that what you're doing?
Yes, because it is.
I guess we have some Switch news coming up, but yeah.
Just get your screen protector and your carrying case, and you're good to go. Don't take it out of your house without protection. Where Jimmy?
So now let me tell you what I've been playing. What have you been
playing? Yet?
What have you been playing, Scott?
I thought we were.
Scott, what have you been playing?
Well, I'm almost complete with Dragon Quest Builders. I want to finish that story game before finishing anything else. I also have to finish up the Pillars of Eternity.
Wait a minute. Does that game have a new game plus, or does it have extended gameplay after the game's over?
It has extended gameplay in that you have... Terra Incognito, or I'm probably mispronouncing that, but anyway, it's a sandbox mode where you get to build to your heart's content, and you won't be pestered by monsters or have to worry about quests, and you can actually share your builds with other people and even import builds that other people make.
Why can't you have monsters attacking anyway?
Well, they do, but they attack in a different area. You can go to a different area and fight monsters, but like the initial area that you start in is monster free, but you can go to zones, like I said, and fight monsters if you want to, or you know, collect drops from them for resources. And
what is it called? You know, like the horde mode, in which at night everything comes to attack you, like it does in Minecraft.
They do have ghosts that attack you at night, so there are worse enemies. But I think, like I said, in the Terra Incognita mode, your first initial area, you're monster free. They have like three other areas that you unlock as you complete the chapters. And when you're in there, there's monsters that you can fight. And I'm sure when night comes, the ghosts will come there as well.
Okay.
And so, but it's that mode is for primarily just building something with whatever you've unlocked through the story mode, and then, you know, building whatever you want. Whereas in the story mode, you're a little bit more guided towards building certain things and doing blueprints and stuff, but you could still change it up and have things your way. But it is, I guess, a little limited, but you know, you're playing a story mode, so you know, there's some direction. And I've enjoyed the story so far. You're told that you're a builder and you're not going to fight the Dragon Lord in this, but it's coming down to you pretty much have to fight the Dragon Lord. There's no getting around it, even though the goddess is telling you you're not supposed to. You're supposed to wait for the Scion of Erdrick to come forward and do it, and it might be 100 years, but you've got to wait. And so it seems like your character is going to do it, and it's, you know, there might be consequences for it. But when I finish the last chapter, I'll know, you know, the story, the full story for this game.
Are you going to be getting Trails in the Sky 3 this later this year?
Oh yeah, when that comes out, definitely.
Okay. Well, I'm betting TJ's going to get Bulletstorm.
Man, I'm interested, but well, you know, I probably will. That game was fun. I liked the comboing of all the moves you could do with that game, and it was just so fun to do all the action in it. It was a good evolution for Run and Gun, and I wish they would have done more stuff like that, but I'm okay with Doom 2016.
Well, you know, they're adding – well, the thing about Bulletstorm is that they have all new combos, you know, like whip this guy into the air and then shoot him in the air and do a duck pole. That's – what's it called? You know, that's a bonus points and all that stuff.
The only thing I'm worried about is I don't like Duke Nukem's name attached to anything anymore. I that raised a red flag for me because I still remember Duke Nukem forever.
Well, pretend it's a Serious Sam game and you'll be all right.
Okay.
Yeah. What have you been playing, TJ, aside from Zelda?
I picked up Blaster Master Zero because I played that game religiously on Nintendo and I couldn't resist. It's fun. It's a good throwback to the old days of that game. Like, they didn't change up too much of the gameplay. They mostly just changed the way you play the levels. And
is that on Steam?
That's on Switch. It's not on Steam yet, but I suppose it will be eventually because there's nothing to keep it from being on Steam.
World of Goo then for the Switch.
I don't know, but I really had a good laugh at the very beginning of Blaster Master Zero because in the original it was just like this ridiculously simple story. This little boy has a frog. The frog escapes. It drinks some radioactive waste. Grows gigantic. Jumps down a hole. He jumps down the hole after it. He finds a tank. He goes and kills things. That's all there is to it. This one starts off with humans ruined the world, and then it went into an ice age, and then it came out of an ice age, and then same thing as before. But it was like the addition of that little context of, well, humans ruined everything, and then Blaster Master was just like, I don't know if that was necessary, but it was hilarious.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw you posting about the Blaster Master game, and that definitely looks like a fun one to play. I remember playing that as a kid as well, so that at least there's some good games on the Switch.
It's a simple platforming shooter, and that's really all there is to it. And I enjoy you're in the tank for the most part from a side perspective, but the fun part about that one was that you could get out of the tank and you could fight as a little soldier, and there were like top-down sort of – I want to say Contra, but there was – some of the levels in Contra had that where it was the top-down shooter and you walked through the level. Original Metal Gear, that's what it's like. And that's fun. I like the idea of being able to switch from that side-scrolling perspective to a top-down one in a retro game.
Okay, we're going to move on to the game news. Scott, you can take the first one.
Okay. Report. Joy-Con wireless issues caused by manufacturing variation. This is from Game Informer. Nintendo released a statement to Kotaku today addressing the Switch's left Joy-Con connectivity issue, saying the widespread problem is a manufacturing variation. The statement insists there is nothing wrong with the Joy-Con hardware that would be a cause for replacement, and that the variation has already been corrected at the factory level. In the statement, Nintendo writes, there is no design issue with the Joy-Con controllers, and no widespread proactive repair or replacement effort is underway. Manufacturing variation has resulted in wireless interference with a small number of the left Joy-Con. Moving forward, this will not be an issue, as manufacturing variation has been addressed and corrected at the factory level. We have determined a simple fix can be made to any affected Joy-Con to improve connectivity. There are other reasons consumers may be experiencing wireless interference. We are asking consumers to contact our customer support team so we can help them determine if a repair is necessary. If it is, consumers can send the controller directly to Nintendo for adjustment free of charge with the anticipated quick return of less than a week. Repair timing may vary by region. For help with any hardware or software questions, please visit support.nintendo.com.
That's a kind of weird statement. There's nothing wrong with a Joy-Con, but we'll replace it for free. Because it's broken.
I do understand what they mean by manufacturing variation. They're talking about human error. Somehow somebody didn't do something right, and a whole bunch of Joy-Cons were made defective because somebody at the factory messed up.
No, it's more like manufacturing variations come from when you're doing it cheap and you're doing it fast. Cheap and fast. That's basically what they're saying. We wanted to rush this thing out, and remember, here's the thing about the Switch, is that they didn't even know what the Switch was until like a year ago, and they had announced the Switch 2 years ago. This is a Nintendo rushed this console out, basically. It's made of the cheapest materials, and, you know, because if you ever look inside the base, it's just one board and a lot of empty space and a lot of plastic. That's it. And, oh, by the way you fix the Joy-Con, I believe, is putting a styrofoam peanut in the thing or something like that.
That's cheap as hell.
Inside it?
Yeah, something like that. It's like a styrofoam thingy that you have to put inside.
Weird.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. They're lying when they say it's not widespread. Every single Switch owner has had this happen. It has to have a direct line to the TV or it won't work. It has to be I'm telling you, but people put it down by their side and they lose connection.
I haven't had that happen.
If you say so.
I'm not joking. I haven't.
But you haven't been playing it as a console. You've been playing it as a handheld.
No, I've been playing it on my TV more than I've been playing it as a handheld, and I haven't had connectivity issues. Like I said, we've talked about this before, I won the lottery. But I've also had two sets of Joy-Cons at this point, and I'm not saying that the problem doesn't exist. I'm just saying that, like, it's weird how, like, that's a very distinct level of, like, variation in manufacturing where I could have a Switch that works, and I haven't had any issues with it. Like, the only issue that I could name for my entire probably 30 hours of playing the Switch would be that there's some lag sometimes when I'm playing on the TV in Breath of the Wild.
Oh, but wait. You know, by the way, I forgot to say manufacturing variation means cheap and fast and also no quality control to make sure that they all work.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that it's weird that I could have something that works all the time for the most part, and then somebody else could have just like the worst luck and have a Joy-Con that doesn't connect, get an orange screen of death, get all these horrible things that happen. And I think that's a distinctly poor level of quality control. Not everyone is getting the same level of product, and that sucks.
You can always buy a Pro Controller for $90.
Yeah, I could, but I won't.
Because if you're going to play it on the TV, that is the controller to use, from what I understand. The Pro Control.
It does look cool, but I don't like that price tag.
Yeah, I mean, in your case, Scott, I don't think you're gonna lose anything just waiting.
Yeah, definitely waiting.
You know, I'm pretty sure something's going to come up with a bundle. Legend of Zelda plus Pro Controller plus Switch for $300.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. Although I'm hearing right now that it was at the beginning of this month that it sold out, and there hasn't been any sort of restocking, which they're probably going to wait until either ARMS comes out in the summer, or they're finally going to kick it off when Mario comes out in December, which is a long time to wait for a new console.
It's a long time to wait. A lot of people might lose it, because here's the thing. The Scorpio is going to be unveiled at E3. And I'm willing to bet you dollars to donuts it's going to be available this Christmas. You know, that's the way Microsoft rolls. So, I mean, it's probable that Nintendo doesn't view Microsoft as the competition because they don't sell their consoles in Japan. That's their logic.
it's also going to be
expensive. But by then, by the way, the Xbox One is going to drop in price too. So they have to consider that. And the Pro, too, the PS4 Pro. I'm willing to bet you the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One S are going to be $200 each during the holidays this year.
Yeah. I mean, it also might be that they're looking to capitalize on that idea of it as a mobile console. Which, if that is the case, then they're going to need to bump out some very distinctly better things with the production. They need a better screen protector. The screen protector for the Nintendo Switch sucks right now. It's awful. I tried.
Battery sucks. That's even worse.
Yeah, they're also going to need like some solution for the battery, where like not just like controllers, but like something that you can actually attach to it that extends the battery life somehow. Or
no, I forgot. No, people were complaining about the way it charges. Like, I think you have to tip it on its side or whatever to charge it, and you can't charge it without having specific circumstances. I mean, you know, the Switch, how do you charge the controllers?
You attach them to the screen and put the screen in the dock.
Okay.
It's not that hard, I don't think. I mean, you have to deal with putting them on the screen and then putting it all in the dock, and that leads to people complaining that, well, I scratched my screen. Well, yeah, because you're probably jostling it around as you're trying to put
the controllers
on.
You have to lay it down on its side, though, or something like that to charge?
Mine stands straight up, and I haven't tried to mess with putting it on its side just because...
No, what I mean is you have to put something in the bottom. You have to plug something in the bottom or something.
Oh, yeah, there's a little case on the back of the stand where you plug in everything, and I don't know, it doesn't really get in the way as much as you might think. The cord is like 3 feet long, and that's stupid, but...
What, you mean the Joy-Con cord?
No, the cord that connects the dock to your wall outlet.
Oh, no, I was confusing it with the mini NES, which had a foot-long joystick cord.
Oh.
Jeez.
Yeah,
that's really terrible, because I know with Sony you just plug it in the cord, the charge cable. I don't know why Sony doesn't give a charge cable with their controllers anymore. That's strange. I mean, you buy a controller, you might need a cord to charge your controller. It's just weird.
You know, with the Xbox One, you only need a USB, just a regular micro USB. The thing is, I usually get the official one because it has that little light that lights up when it's actually charging.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with the PS4. I'm actually using an old Samsung cell phone cable to charge my PS4 controller.
Yeah, but does it light up? Does it turn green when it's ready?
No, I just broke my other one, and it was a quick fix.
I know. Same thing with me. I mean, I have plenty of ways to charge my controller, but I just want that way that it's going to light up green when it's ready. Because I want that. I want the green light. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead. And you might find this interesting, TJ.
There is a way to transfer Switch save data Nintendo just doesn't want you to know, from BGR. One of the rather puzzling decisions that Nintendo made for its brand new Switch console was the save game data. Rather than letting you transfer your hard-earned Zelda Quest data from one device to another, your saves are supposed to be tied to the device. Quote, on Nintendo Switch, game data is stored on the console's system memory, Nintendo's own website says. This will not change whether downloadable software or software from a game card is being played. Game save data cannot be saved or copied to a micro SD card. But as it turns out, Nintendo might have left a loophole in there and not told anyone about it. A Reddit user recently sent his Switch in for repair and received a different console back from Nintendo. But contrary to his expectations, the save game data came along for the ride. Quote, to be sure, I went and checked my storage. It said it was all empty. A bit disappointed, I thought. Let me at least boot up Zelda, so it needed an update. While it was updating, however, I saw an icon of what looked like downloading from a cloud. So full of hope, I started my game, and there was my saves. From the sound of things, it's a Nintendo Cloud data transfer tied to your account rather than a physical transfer of data. It's unclear if it's possible to do this kind of transfer on your own, or if Nintendo has to pull the Switches behind the scenes.
Yeah, so, I mean, good for them. I mean, cloud saves have been around since the PS3 and the Xbox 360, let alone Steam. That's one good thing that you can actually, when you actually have an account attached to you, unlike their other consoles, is that you can do this sort of stuff. it's unfortunate that you can't take your save data, say, like, you want to take the save data to a friend's Switch just so you can show them where you are in Zelda or whatever. But then again, it is portable.
I'm going to put my money down on a theory.
Go ahead.
Given the relative cheapness of Nintendo with most of their technology for the Switch and just what we talked about, the manufacturing, I would be willing to bet that the reason why they won't let the public utilize cloud storage is because they might not have the server integrity for it.
They probably don't. I agree.
And you know what? If they did have a cloud and they did have a good cloud, why not say, you know what? You stream your games and store it. You can delete your games. You can just re-upload them from the cloud. You can play them from the cloud. You know, I mean, you could do that definitely with little ROMs with their you know, their NES ROMs. You could definitely do that in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. I just don't think that Nintendo has the storage capacity in place or the integrity of their connections to be able to handle a wide user base utilizing cloud storage. I think it's specifically a private cloud storage that they can utilize for basically repair and tech work right now.
But hey, TJ, at least if your console just burns itself out, at least you'll know you'll be able to get your Zelda back.
If I can find another Switch.
Well, I mean, you have to send it in for repair, and they send you a refurbished one or whatever. You know, at least you'll be able to.
I do miss having memory cards. Those were fun.
Well, you do sort of, kind of here. I mean, that's how you install games on it. But the game saves are locked to that one console. So if you take out your SD card with the save files, it's not going to work on other Switches.
Right.
So you do have cards, you know, you do have removable cards. You just can't use the save games on other people's consoles.
Right, there's a console storage, which is 32 megabytes, and then there's SD cards that you install, which I would be willing to bet that any save the game that you have is going to go straight to the console storage on that 32 megabytes with no choice to switch where you're sending things.
This is all a part of Nintendo combating homebrew. Because save files are one way that you can exploit a game.
Yeah, I would believe that.
So, but bottom line is, at least you can, you know, like I said, at least there's a cloud save, even if you don't know about it. You know, they don't tell you about it, which is strange. I mean, that would be a feature I would put on the box. Cloud saves. You know, you can't use your card on another person's thing. But guess what? You can get your stuff back on your console.
Yeah, and I mean, it's certainly a feature when it comes to reassuring people against catastrophic technology failure, which in the case of Nintendo is certainly a thing to be concerned about.
I mean, Steam runs on that because every save on Steam is a cloud save. You know, you install a game, guess what? And you install all the local content, including your save games. Guess what? Those save games are still going to be there for you if you want them. You know, that's how I got my save games from the Xbox 360 to the Xbox One. You know, when you're backwards compatible, what's it called? You save it on your Xbox 360. Then when you install it on your Xbox One, guess what? Those save games are there.
Yeah,
and that's backwards compatibility save game files. By the way, I have to tell you, it made me happy that I was able to have those files because I playing it from scratch. Oh dear. So, anyways, we're going to move on to the next. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next news item. Alexander the Great will leave Macedon in Civilization VI, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. Yesterday, 2K announced that Persia, led by Cygnus the Great, would be one of the two new civilizations added to Civilization VI in the upcoming DLC. Today, it unveiled Cyrus's partner in that expansion, and he's pretty great too. Nice little pun there. His name is Alexander, son of Philip, and he's the ruler of Macedon. Macedon's unique Macedon's unique Hypaspis units are elite shield-bearing soldiers who carry a spear and sword into battle, while the Heteroi, better known as the Companions, are a fast, heavily cavalry unit that's quote-unquote widely regarded as the world's first shock troops. For a unique building, Macedon gets the Balaskoi Paeides, where noble sons and young boys are taken as political hostages and raised to serve, honor, and protect the king, and to serve Macedon's interests above all else, and the unique Hellenistic fusion ability grants it a bonus every time a city is conquered. As for Big Al himself, he's all about the fight. His ability, to the world's end, grants reduced war weariness so that Macedon can stay at war with its neighbors for longer stretches without suffering unduly for it. Ironically, his army decided to quit on him when he tried to conquer India. He later died at age 32. As for Persia, the Civ's elite heavy foot soldier is the immortal, which grants a ranged attack and a strong defense. The Paradenza, or Persian Gardens, give Persia a free trade route and bonuses to internal trade routes when political philosophy is unlocked. Persia also brings the Fall of Babylon ability to the table, which provides a bonus movement to Persian units following the declaration of a surprise war. He also suffers reduced diplomatic penalties for declaring surprise wars. They'll both be available this spring in the Civilization Scenario Pack. So, yeah, when the AI is going to be Persia, I'm going to be very upset. Because declaring a surprise war, and oh, by the way, we're moving faster, haha, that's going to be really annoying.
Yeah, I agree. I can see that happening. They like to already do surprise wars, and that's just going to get obnoxious.
So, as our resident Civ expert, not you, TJ, the other one, what did you think when you heard about these? By the way, you know, it's odd because these two are usually not DLC. They're usually the main leaders that you find in previous civilizations.
I know. Greece was a main Civ for a long time.
It was Alexander.
Persia, I think it was an expansion pack one in Civ 4. I'm not sure. I can't remember in Civ 5. It's been a while. But I'm looking forward to these. I like the way Persia looks, and I think it'll be fun to play both Civs and see how it works out.
You know what I'm thinking is that you can have Persia, both Greece, and Macedon, as well as Egypt, and have a five-player Civ game, which is sort of like a ready-made scenario right there.
Yeah, that does sound good.
So, go ahead.
Hopefully there'll be scenarios that include that, but you know, if not, then somebody can just do make one on their own. This was very easy to make.
TJ?
Sorry. Had a brain fart there for a second. Anyways, yeah, I'm trying to think, like, with the current systems in place, Persia sounds a little overpowered. And, like, by a little, I mean terribly annoying. The immortals, I think we've seen them in previous games, and
yes,
for some reason I keep thinking they were assholes. Like, they were just as bad of assholes as India's elephant cavalry.
Yeah, which, they have ranged attack. That's going to be very useful, I think.
You know, the funny thing is that the immortals in real life, they were just shock. I mean, they were just cannon fodder, you know, and the reason why they're called the immortals is that there were so many people just thrown, it seemed like they never ended. That's why they were called immortals, because they all dressed the same, they all looked the same, and they just attacked the same. And maybe they just tossed at the enemy willy-nilly, just go attack them, and that's why they're called the immortals. But yeah, I mean, a ranged unit with a strong defense can be devastating.
Yes.
But then again, it is an early era unit, which is a problem for a lot of the ancient civilizations. They like the Jaguar guy and all that stuff. You know, when you have the early unit, it's like, yeah, but how often are you going to be actually trying to conquer another civilization that early?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm a stalwart player of Scythia. So I'm a big fan of their ability to produce ranged cavalry.
Okay.
Rapidly.
Everybody, just so you know, TJ loves the Zerg. That's what he's actually saying. That's what those guys are. They're the Zerg in Civilization.
Yeah.
TJ wants to do a Zerg rush in Civ.
Well, yeah, and if I don't have a local city state in my first 30 turns, I'm not doing it right. like if I haven't conquered them with my horse knights, then I'm doing it wrong. And yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, I will love the Immortals, but I also love the mobility of the Scythians. But that defense, I mean, that's going to be a factor.
Yeah, but also the Fall of Babylon ability is going to be a real pain. Can you imagine being near Scythia and Persia, and maybe even next to the Mongols too, who have their own, you know, what's it called, lightning fast attack? I mean, those are going to be horrible neighbors if they're AI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't. I don't want to deal with the Immortals on the AI. I don't want to deal with Surprise Wars on the AI, and I don't. And I certainly don't want to deal with Surprise War Immortals that don't get penalties for it.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is that they're not going to be as much of a warmonger, even though they just did a surprise war. Usually, doing a surprise war is the worst warmongering penalty you can get. And that's one of the things that turns me off Civ 2, is that, you know, even the AI can do anything they want to, and anything you do to react to it is still going to have you branded a warmonger, even though it's completely understandable why you might counterattack, you know?
Yeah, that part needs to be fixed. I know they've had a lot of issues with getting warmongering penalties just for defending yourself. It just seems very... The programming and logic just doesn't make sense.
There should be a tech that allows you to kill religious characters with your soldiers. They did that in real life, for crying out loud. Why not have it here? I mean, yes, I know it's not so, you know, but, or make it a wonder. If you get that wonder, you're allowed to attack. Religious people with your regular units. I'm going to tell you something. There's going to be a rush to get build that wonder out, you know, in a human a multiplayer game.
Yeah.
I wonder what they would call it too. I mean, what world wonder would represent that? Or maybe just add it to the pyramids. I mean, all they do is give you workers. Big whoop. Oh, wait, am I thinking of Civ 5? What do the pyramids do in Civ 6 again? Is it the same thing?
It might be. It's been a while.
It mostly boosts production and supplies you with a couple builders.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, just add the... here's the thing. The Egyptians didn't like to... what's it called? To murder religious people. Let them have that... the pyramids have that ability.
I think you can get rid of apostles, but the missionaries, yeah. I thought there was a diplomatic thing where you could tell other civs to get their missionaries out of your borders.
Yeah, they don't listen to you. They say, oh, sorry, and then they do it anyway.
Mm.
And then you call, and then you have a casus belli, and everybody says you're a warmonger.
Yeah, it just seems broken.
That's why I don't play it as much. That's why I'm playing FTL. At least when FTL is unfair, it's like, oh yeah, well, it's a roguelike. What can you expect? Civilization is supposed to be Scott, have you heard of any expansions coming?
Not yet, no.
Okay, I'm just wondering. Because usually
they will eventually.
When they do an expansion... well, here's the thing. When Civ does an expansion, it's to fix the game. More or less, you know? Yeah, like, the two expansions, Gods and Kings and Brave New World both fixed Civ 5. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with Civ 6.
It will be interesting. I just wish they would get out of that habit. I mean, this... seemed like the best game since, you know, where they hopefully but they have a lot of AI issues that hopefully will be fixed. And also user interface issues. People are having trouble, like, with the victory conditions, like culture and such, knowing what's going on to add to that victory, and it just seems a little too vague.
I turn off culture because it's too easy to get in Civ 6.
Yeah. But it usually has been pretty easy to get.
Well, it wasn't easy in Civ 5. You had to jump through a lot of hoops in Civ 5 to get the culture victory there.
Well, for me, it was easy. I just collected artifacts. I built culture stuff, and it just shot up.
Yeah, even so, it was still
very easy.
Even so, it still was hard. I mean, though you impressed everybody with your blue jeans and movies. And
yeah, CDs.
I just waited until Brave New World came out. Then it was easier.
True. Anyways, so we still have the DLC coming out for Civ 6, which is nice. I haven't played in a while. I've been too busy playing other stuff, including FTL. So, oh boy, I'm trying to think of a question of the week, and I'm not thinking of any. So, how about you guys out there? Why don't you ask us what you think? Anything about this? Here's a question: do you still want to get a Switch? Yes or no? That's the question of the week this week. Knowing all the technical problems that they're having, including Nintendo finally admitting they're kind of, sort of, is a problem. They said they blame the factory and not themselves. If you notice, it's not our fault; it's their fault. I wonder if they use Foxconn. Anyways,
no.
But yeah, are you still interested in getting a Switch? And if you want to get a Switch, do you want to get it now, or do you want to wait until Christmas or something like that? It's going to be very interesting to see what Nintendo shows off at E3.
I think they have some games. Hopefully, show off more stuff that they're going to release.
Did they actually show off the Switch hardware at E3 last year? I don't think they did. Yeah, I think we had to wait until like September or November or something like that before they actually showed it. That's right. They never really showed it. They just said, oh, the Switch exists. And that's it. They didn't show it. They didn't show any gameplay. Did they show? No, they showed Zelda, right? They showed Zelda footage, but they didn't show the hardware itself. So it'll be interesting. This will be the Switch's actual real first E3 coming up.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of one-word answers from you guys. so anyways, we will see you next week, and let us know your answer to the question of the week. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. I am Jonah Falcon at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I'm TJ Denzer, and you can find me at Johnny Chugs.
And I am Alpha Shard at Alpha Shard on Twitter.
Yeah, Alpha is his first name. Shard is his last name. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.